We do need the people who have gotten rich off the spoils of yesterday's injustice, yesterday's apartheid, yesterday's laying of the groundwork for today's capitalism. And there needs to be redistribution from the large corporations that have gotten all that wealth to the rest of the people throughout the world. But the point of that redistribution isn't just so we can shuffle around, you know, cells on an Excel spreadsheet. I think we should also be building a different kind of world that doesn't structurally run on racism and other kinds of oppression and capitalism. And the construction of constructive view is the point of building that world. That world would have a much different energy system. It would produce things in a different way. It would manage resources in a different and more democratic way. And I think those are the kinds of changes we have to think about building rather than only thinking about redistributing money or only thinking about tearing down the structures that we have now.
Olufemi Otaiwo, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Georgetown University, author of most recently two books, the most recent, Elite Capture, How the Powerful Took Over Identity Politics and Everything Else, and Reconsidering Reparations. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Gezder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warren, Afterina Ndura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, our general manager, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify
every
if the meeting is being
held. Every month we bring you
30
minutes of news and information about people who use drugs as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights, and much more. Tune in and listen to Free Culture Radio on the third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Pacific here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, the Newburgh School District ends its ban on Black Lives Matter and Pride flags.
Newly unsealed documents show gendered harassment and pay discrimination in a Nike court case.
And the Washington legislature considers a bill to make clergy members mandatory reporters.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. The Newburgh School District ban on political symbols like pride flags and Black Lives Matter signs is no more. The school board voted to rescind its policy in a meeting on January 10th as part of a settlement with the teachers' union. Back in September of 2021, the school board approved a policy that banned employees and students from displaying political signage on school grounds. The ban singled out things like pride flags and Black Lives Matter signs. The policy was divisive in the community and not supported by students. This led to protests, and the school board eventually voted to fire its superintendent, Job Morlock, when he refused to enforce the ban. A board member resigned, and there was a failed public vote to recall two board members promoting the policy. The ban was challenged in court for being unconstitutional by two bodies. The American Civil Liberties Union won a lawsuit against the school district in September, and the Newburgh Education Association Teachers Union settled another suit in December. That union settlement required the school board to not appeal the ACL case ruling against them and to promise that they would rescind or amend the controversial symbols ban.
That's what led to the vote and ultimately decision at the recent board meeting. There was reportedly no real discussion or debate, and the board voted 7-0 to get rid of that policy. Newburgh Superintendent Stephen Phillips told OPB, quote, "The policy will not be amended or changed. It is gone," end quote. The union settlement also says the school board will reimburse them for a significant portion of the legal fees incurred. It is not yet clear whether that means the school district or individual board members will pay the legal fees. Union officials said, quote, "The ruling validates our claims and assertions. It protects the marginalized populations in our student and staff bodies. We can continue to create safe spaces in our schools and offer support to students who identify as LGBTQIA+ and students of color without fear of retaliation," end quote.
Unsealed documents in a lawsuit against Nike detail widespread complaints of harassment for women employees and pay disparities. Multiple women employees are suing Nike for sex discrimination, harassment, and an $11,000 per year gender pay gap. Nike is headquartered in Beaverton, and they fought for 3 years to keep these court documents out of the public eye. The papers contain firsthand accounts from women who worked at the company and their experiences. One described a new hire, quote, "terrorizing her with a boys' club attitude," and that, quote, "he knows he can get away with it." Another complained she was being paid $10,000 to $15,000 less than her peers at 2 years into the job. It took months of back and forth for the diversity and inclusion group at the company to confirm that, but by that time she had quit. One woman said, quote, "certain employees, mostly male, are protected because of who they are and who their friends are, regardless of the fact that they are severe underperformers. We keep finding money for these people, and they take up valuable space in the company," end quote. Women at Nike organized an informal Starfish survey, which was unsealed in the lawsuit, that contained many women's experiences being demeaned or sexually harassed. Many reported that they felt Nike's human resources wouldn't act on their concerns. The new documents shed more light on allegations of sexual harassment and disparate pay at the Beaverton campus in 2018. That resulted in the departure of two senior executives and nearly a dozen managers.
A bill in the Washington state legislature would make members of the clergy mandatory reporters of child abuse or neglect. Washington is one of just a few states in the country that do not list religious leaders as mandatory reporters at all. Senate Bill 5280 is partially in reaction to reporting last year that revealed an alleged pattern of sexual assault cover-ups by Jehovah's Witnesses in the state. Jehovah's Witnesses operate with a two-witness rule, meaning that they won't take action against someone unless two witnesses come forward with information. That rule allowed sexual predators to continue their abuse for years. Proponents say this bill will eliminate that rule. 43 states in the U.S., including Oregon, list clergy as mandatory reporters. That means that when a religious leader learns of child abuse or neglect, they have a legal obligation to report it. In the Washington bill, there is an exception if clergy find out about the abuse when someone is seeking spiritual guidance or during confession. That's an important point, because clergy say it's important that they are not forced to reveal what people say in confession, or else people may not trust the church with the truth. State Senator Noelle Frame, who sponsored the bill, says eventually she would like to take that provision out. State lawmakers have tried to make clergy mandatory reporters before, but faced pushback from the Roman Catholic Church, the Mormon Church, and Jehovah's Witnesses.
The Columbia River has new protections thanks to the Environmental Protection Agency. They say the Army Corps of Engineers must stop putting oil and other pollutants into the water. Mark Moran spoke to an attorney at the advocacy group Columbia Riverkeeper to learn more.
The EPA has ordered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to stop oil and other toxic chemical discharges into the Columbia River in Washington and Oregon. Recent spills have the issue back at the forefront. The group Columbia Riverkeeper sued the Corps last year and says these pollutants harm fish and other wildlife in the Columbia and Snake Rivers. Miles Johnson, the group's senior attorney, says the permits address four dams along the river that are pollution sources, and the problem is bigger than petroleum and chemical pollution.
In addition, the dams create big reservoirs that soak up the sun's energy and make the river too hot for salmon and steelhead. the permits that EPA issued to the Army Corps are a directive to deal with some of those problems.
In operating the dams, the Corps will be required to use environmentally friendly lubricants, pay closer attention to water temperatures in those reservoirs, and remove water from some of them if they get too hot for the fish to survive. The issue was highlighted again recently when between 300 and 600 gallons of oil leaked into the Snake River from a turbine at Little Goose Dam in eastern Washington. Johnson says this type of pollution has become a pattern with the Corps and has to be monitored and addressed constantly.
Sometimes it's 1 gallon, sometimes it's 5 gallons, sometimes it's hundreds of gallons or even thousands of gallons. And sometimes that oil contains toxic chemicals like PCBs. And after watching it happen over and over again, Columbia Riverkeeper took action, which is what we do when someone illegally discharges pollution into the river.
The EPA took the action under the Clean Water Act. Columbia Riverkeeper has sued federal and state agencies multiple times and continues to monitor Northwest waterways and the wildlife that depend on them. For Oregon News Service, I'm Mark Moran.
The grocery chains Albertsons and Kroger have proposed a merger that could have consequences for rural communities. It's also focused attention on the country's antitrust laws. Eric Tagadoff has more.
The proposed merger between the Idaho-based grocery chain Albertsons and Kroger has antitrust laws in the spotlight. The supermarket companies are the two largest in the country. Idaho has the third most Albertsons stores in the country, with 39 across the state. Announced in October, the merger has been under intense scrutiny. Head of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, Stacy Mitchell, says the grocery industry is already consolidated, and that hurts workers, small businesses, and consumers.
We've seen food production workers and farmers getting paid less for food, and we've seen consumers paying more for groceries. And what's happening is that you've got a small number of companies in the middle, the middlemen, including the supermarket chains, who are absorbing more and more of that spending for themselves.
Mitchell notes that since the announcement of the merger, Congress has enacted what she calls the most significant antitrust legislation in 50 years. The Merger Filing Fee Modernization Act was passed in the government spending package in December. It lowers fees on smaller acquisitions and increases them for the largest mergers, raising more money for Congress to use to fund antitrust enforcement. Mitchell says consolidation especially is harmful for rural areas, which depend more on small and mid-sized businesses for their economy. She says the country has seen a sharp decline in businesses of this type.
Rural areas have been particularly hard hit by that because, you know, if you're a small town, you don't have a corporate headquarters of a giant company, right? You rely naturally on smaller businesses, and those businesses have really been hurt and squeezed by the monopoly problem that we're seeing.
The spending package also includes the State Antitrust Enforcement Venue Act, which makes it easier for state attorneys general litigating antitrust cases to remain in their selected courts. Mitchell notes these changes have support from lawmakers in both parties.
We've seen this growing momentum in Congress to address antitrust, and it's bipartisan. That's one of the things that I think is striking in this moment, given the partisan divisions on just about any other issue you can think of.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The White House calls GOP debt demands a recipe for economic disaster. Senator Bernie Sanders says the working class deserves more, and a failed GOP candidate is arrested for a drive-by shooting in New Mexico. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
This is not a plan. It is a recipe for economic catastrophe.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says Republicans in Congress are holding the nation's credit rating hostage to GOP demands to cut Social Security and Medicare. President Biden has rejected requests by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to discuss the nation's debt limit as the country faces a more than $31 trillion borrowing cap Thursday. Senator Bernie Sanders, incoming chair of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, says lawmakers can work together to ensure all Americans have a decent standard of living.
Is that pie in the sky, or is that something that we can actually accomplish if we put our minds to it? And I think we can.
Sanders says it will take courage for lawmakers to take on powerful special interests and show Americans that government can work for them and not just the 1%. District Attorney for Bernalillo County, New Mexico, San Bregman, says a failed Republican candidate has been arrested in connection with a series of drive-by shootings targeting the homes of Democratic lawmakers.
An attack on an elected official is an attack on democracy, whoever that elected official is, Democrat or Republican.
Police say Solomon Pena made unfounded claims last year's midterm election was rigged against him. Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Paul Gosar of Arizona will both receive committee assignments after being stripped of those roles in the last Congress for previous comments and online activity supporting political violence. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says New York Congressman George Santos will also serve on committees, despite evidence showing he fabricated his education, employment, and ethnic background prior to his election last year. Santos is under investigation for alleged campaign spending violations and faces calls for his resignation. Senator Elizabeth Warren frequently proposed a federal wealth tax during her presidential bid in 2020.
When you make a top 0.1% big, pitch in 2 cents so everybody else gets a chance.
Now lawmakers in several state houses from California to New York will attempt similar statewide proposals this week to increase taxes on the ultra-rich, taxing not just wealthy incomes but assets as well.
The central cause of January 6th was one man, Donald Trump, whom many others followed.
Representative Liz Cheney kept the focus on former President Donald Trump during the House January 6th committee hearings last year, but the Washington Post reports the committee declined to include details in its final report of how social media companies failed to control online extremism prior to the January 6th attack, fearing a public battle with the powerful tech companies. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Melanie Henshaw from Street Roots about new funding from Congress that supports the Indian Health Service. At 6 p.m., it's Earth Riot Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. And then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mick Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some rain showers and an overnight low of 37. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with high of 44. And today in history, in 1941, an X-ray generating machine is exhibited for the first time by H.L. Smith. The quote of the day is from English author A.A. Milne, who wrote the Winnie the Pooh series. He was born a day in 1882. Milne wrote, quote, "It is much more fun to talk with someone who doesn't use long, difficult words, but rather short, easy words like, what about lunch?"
Over 2,000 anomalies have been detected under a former Canadian Indian residential school, but they have not yet been identified as human remains. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials at a First Nation in Saskatchewan say they've located more than 2,000 anomalies after using radar at the site of a former Indian residential school. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, they have not yet been confirmed as human remains.
The ground search of the former Capel Indian residential school began about a year and a half ago with the help of ground-penetrating radar. So far, searchers have found a jawbone fragment believed to be from a child of 5 or 6 years of age. The bones were dated about 1898. Ground search project leader Sheldon Poitras says this is physical proof of an unmarked grave.
This discovery here at this site just validates what we've always known. It validates to the world that those stories have some merit.
In addition to the more than 2,000 anomalies, searchers found underground rooms or tunnels. Poitras says the data and the stories from survivors of the former residential school is motivation to continue searching. He says there's been talk about some drilling to bring up samples and test for DNA. The chief of the Star Blanket Cree Nation, Michael Starr, says the discoveries so far are significant.
It's changed the things that we're going to do. It's changed our mindset. It's changed our way of life.
Some surrounding property owners have agreed to allow searches on their property that's near the former school site. Poitras says the site of the former school is located in the village of Librette, about 50 miles northeast of Regina. The school was opened in 1884, and in 1951 it became one of the first residential schools to offer a high school program. The report from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission said the school had a high death rate. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he was saddened and disturbed by the finding of a child's remains along with potential unmarked graves. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This week, hundreds of people gathered in Utqiagvik to remember Oliver Levitt, a whaling captain and expert on Arctic survival and an influential Alaska Native leader. He played a role in developing the North Slope Borough and ASRC, a regional Native corporation, which today is Alaska's largest private company. Chairman of the board for the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Crawford Pukatuk, led the memorial service for Levitt, who died last week at the age of 79. He recalled how Levitt championed efforts to develop the slope's oil, coal, and natural gas.
He was a staunch fighter for rights to the resources.
Willie Hensley, a friend of Levitt's for 50 years, says the two worked together to implement the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, becoming strong advocates in Washington, D.C.
Our nation's capital became his hunting ground, and he was good at it. This is the kind of job that most Inupiat wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. But he did his duty for all of us, and he understood who had the power.
U.S. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski was among leaders who attended the service, saying Levitt taught her how to fight more effectively for Alaska causes.
It's important for you to understand how Oliver touched the world.
Murkowski says leaders across the country have been influenced by Levitt, whose efforts raise the level of empowerment for all Alaska Native people. A flag was flown at the nation's capital in his honor and will be given to his family. Tribal leaders and U.S. New Mexico lawmakers are gathering in Albuquerque Wednesday to celebrate the STOP Act becoming law. The Safeguard Tribal Objects of Patrimony Act prohibits the exporting of sacred Native American items and increases penalties for stealing and illegally trafficking tribal cultural patrimony. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As worker wages have dropped, adjusted for inflation, the richest 1% grabbed nearly two-thirds of all new wealth since 2020. That's according to Survival of the Richest, a new Oxfam International report. In 2022, 95 food and energy corporations more than doubled their profits and paid out $257 billion to rich shareholders. Eric Galatas reports in Wyoming.
The world's richest 1% took home almost twice as much wealth as the bottom 99% combined during the pandemic, according to a new Oxfam International report. Morris Pearl with the group Patriotic Millionaires says current tax codes are not cutting it anymore. The rich keep getting richer while people who work for a living are making daily sacrifices on essentials such as food, which is not good for families or for investors who want to make money.
Because money does not trickle down. Money trickles up. As people pay their bills for their iPhone and their rent every single month, that is how rich people make money and get richer. And if people don't have enough money to do that, that's not good for any of us.
The report says a 5% tax on the world's multimillionaires could raise enough money to lift 2 billion people out of poverty. Wyoming tax codes are pointed in the opposite direction. The state does not tax corporate or individual income. Wyoming has a higher sales tax, which falls hardest on low-wage earners, than at least 40 other states. Only 11 states collect lower property taxes. While families in Wyoming struggled with rising gas and grocery prices, the report found that profits for 95 top energy and food corporations more than doubled in 2022, with 84% of those gains going directly into the pockets of wealthy shareholders. Pearl says people who earn their living by working for wages, with taxes taken right out of their paychecks, have been left behind.
The system is rigged against them, and we have to unrig the system. We have to change the system so they are not holding the bag for everything that the government needs to do, and we need to make the rich pay some of the taxes too.
Three quarters of the world's governments plan on making nearly $8 trillion in cuts to public sector funding, including healthcare and education, over the next 5 years. Pearl says taxes make it possible to provide for the nation's common defense, hire firefighters and police, and build schools, hospitals, and highways.
And things like that have, for the history of this nation, been done by people putting their resources together and doing things together that they just can't each do individually by themselves.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
Microsoft announced that it will be laying off 10,000 workers by the end of March. That's around 5% of its global workforce. Sales of computers and software have declined since the boom created by COVID and more people working from home. Microsoft's chief executive officer, Satya Nadella, said that organizations in every industry and region worldwide were being cautious, quote, as some parts of the world are in a recession and other parts are anticipating one. The company is also shifting some resources to AI. Microsoft is an investor in OpenAI, the company behind the ChatGPT chatbot. Other large U.S. tech companies like Meta, Amazon, and business software maker Salesforce have already announced extensive job cuts as well.
Four New York City public health clinics will soon be offering free abortion pills, Mayor Eric Adams announced. Abortion pills are used in more than 50% of all U.S. abortions, but most are given in hospital, where patients and their insurance are billed. The pills will be available at a Bronx clinic, but rollout to the other three could take up to a year due to federally mandated training for the healthcare workers. Adams said, quote, for too long, health and healthcare has been centered around men. If men had periods, pap smears, and menopause, they would get a paid vacation, and if men could get pregnant, we wouldn't see Congress trying to pass laws restricting abortion, end quote. While abortion is legal in New York, it is now effectively banned in 13 other states.
Those who track mental health needs in the United States say it's becoming more obvious that there's a growing shortage of care providers. One policy group says care doesn't just have to happen in a clinical setting. Its new report says trained individuals in the background can step up. Mike Mullen has more in South Dakota.
Most South Dakotans live in federally designated mental health professional shortage areas. A new report says there are steps Congress and other decision makers can take to help states close gaps within the behavioral health workforce. The Bipartisan Policy Center is out with recommendations it feels can help address the growing demand for mental health services amid a shortage of licensed providers. The center's Kendall Strong says one solution is to enhance the role of those with mental health training who don't have the full credentials. She says behavioral health support specialists are certainly up to the task.
These people are underutilized and they have a lot to offer because part of the folks that we're talking about are folks like peer support specialists who have lived experiences and can really connect with folks who are struggling.
Others in this group are community health workers and paraprofessionals. The report recommends reducing barriers for these individuals to take on bigger roles in behavioral health. That includes adopting a certification framework that promotes flexibility but still protects patients. Strong acknowledges a divided Congress might provide obstacles, but adds there's optimism with both parties recognizing the provider shortage. The report says pulling in more help can free up licensed providers who are dealing with patient backlogs. And Strong says behavioral health support specialists are embedded in the community and can meet in a non-clinical setting. She suggests that can be especially helpful in rural areas where mental health stigma still might exist.
In areas where there is just less infrastructure visibly as compared to urban areas, it's really clear if you're going into a healthcare facility.
The report also calls on federal officials to explore expanding Medicaid and Medicare coverage of services provided by behavioral health support specialists. Kaiser Family Foundation says South Dakota has nearly 60 areas with provider shortage designations, which affects nearly 800,000 residents. Mike Moen, Greater Dakota News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Catherine Carley, Mike Moen, Eric Gladys, Antonia Gonzalez, and Mark Moran. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, where we'll be taking a look into new funding for the Indian Health Service.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is KBOO News in Depth. I'm speaking with Melanie Henshaw, the Indigenous Affairs reporter from Street Roots, about her new article, Congress Provides New Funding Stability to IHS. Congress announces long-awaited advance funds for Indian Health Service, but ongoing underfunding is problematic. Welcome, Melanie.
Hi, Althea. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So about $5 billion have been allocated in advance funding for the Indian Health Service for 2023. To start here, can you tell us, what is the Indian Health Service?
So the Indian Health Service is a federal health service provider that provides health care to around 2.6 million Native Americans and Alaska Natives, so citizens of the 574 federally recognized tribes. The U.S. government is obligated through trust and treaty obligations to provide health care to Native folks. So Congress created the IHS in 1955, and it currently fulfills those obligations.